Welcome to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast, where trauma survivors become healthy thrivers. Each month, we'll feature a theme in the trauma recovery and empowerment field to promote your recovery, healing, and learning how to build dreams. Here's your host, Karen Robinson, transformational coach and therapist.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast. Today, my guest is Teresa Lodato. I'll let her tell you how she says her name in really fancy Italian in a few minutes, because that's really fun. So Teresa, welcome. I'm going to just do a little bit of your bio, and then we would love to hear from you. As a former stressed out financial services executive of a top Wall Street firm, Teresa guides stressed out adults and teens to navigate the complexity of relational trauma and the chronic health challenges that accompany stress, burnout, and betrayal. Using cutting-edge techniques and proven strategies based on neuroscience and psychology, her clients fully align with their inner knowing, optimizing mental, emotional, and physical well-being while achieving extraordinary results. Teresa is an author and speaker, in addition to being a highly sought-after coach for forward-thinking individuals and organizations. So welcome, Teresa.
Thank you again, Karen, for having me.
Okay, gotta do the whole little accent thing. Sorry.
Oh, okay. So I was telling, she asked how to pronounce my last name, and I said, it's Lodato, it's Italiano. I'm not Italian, my husband is.
So I just thought that was really cute. So anything to have a little humor in such a, our topic sometimes is a little heavy. So
absolutely.
So one of the things I mentioned in your, well, first of all, is there anything about your bio that you want to add to?
Nope. It's all sounded good.
Okay. So my very first question is, I'm curious about the fact that you're an author. What have you written for books?
So my first book is titled, Why Aren't You Listening to Me? And Elevate Your Emotional Intelligence and Connect with Your Team. And that book came out, actually, it came out right as COVID hit. So, had to kind of stall all the plans for promoting it, but it's out there. And then my second book, it still has a working title. It's either Brokenhearted or Learning to Trust. We're still going back and forth on those two. But basically, it's going to be a guidebook for people who have hit rock bottom in the sense of burnout, betrayal, bereavement, or loss. And so it kind of takes you through the different stages of recovery after you have a rock bottom event. And I just want to highlight that a lot of times when people think of rock bottom, they think of someone who has perhaps drug or alcohol addiction. And although that can be a rock bottom event, there are many rock bottom events in our lives. And like I said, betrayal, bereavement, burnout are certainly some of them that are lesser known. And a lot of people don't really know how to navigate it from that point. So it's really going to be a helpful book for people who have experienced any of that, or maybe are going through it right now, so that they have a roadmap of how to integrate everything that's happening so that you get yourself on the path that you want to be on so that you can achieve success in your life.
Very cool. When is that going to be published?
That it was scheduled to be out at the beginning of next year, but I think it's going to be pushed out to the fall of the following year.
Okay. Please let us know so we can update the show notes with the title so people can find it. So
absolutely.
Because it sounds beautiful. Like, of course, the content's about hard stuff, but the way that you shared about it sounded hopeful and beautiful.
It has stories in it from some of my clients that have given me their permission to use their stories. I've changed their names, of course, just for additional privacy, but it'll have stories in it, and it has lots of the latest neuroscience around relational trauma as well as other trauma. And it's kind of filled with a balance of, you know, the whole integrated mind, the logic and the insight. So it has how to learn to trust yourself. It has, like I said, what to do at different stages and how to integrate everything so that you come out healed and renewed rather than carrying that trauma with you forward.
Awesome. Yeah. So for most of us who write about trauma or teach transformational coaching, or guide, I guess, maybe a better word for transformational coaching. There's some teaching, of course, but it's mentoring and guiding and coaching. Usually it's because we come from some sort of trauma or experienced it. Is that the case for you? And if so, are there pieces of that that you'd be willing to talk about today?
Yeah, I think it is. I think especially when you have successfully navigated trauma that you've experienced in your life, and it provides you a different level of empathy and understanding and compassion. And especially for those of us who have been able to navigate it successfully and be able to come out, you know, the other side so much stronger and better. And like for me, living my life purpose, it's immensely helpful for me to be of service in this way, to be able to guide others to go through, you know, because it really is kind of a darkness that you go through. And it doesn't necessarily mean a darkness, although there are a lot of heavy emotions. It's more that there aren't clear roadmaps to how to navigate it successfully, who to turn to, how you learn to trust yourself again, et cetera. And so that is part of my journey. You know, a little T trauma that I experienced early on in my childhood was my father passing away. He died of cancer of the pancreas, and I was a daddy's girl, if there ever was one. So losing my father at 9 was kind of that initial hit of trauma for me. And then when I was 19, I was serving in the United States Navy, and I was raped by one of my military doctors. And so that provided a level of trauma and betrayal. And then, of course, that set me up for being a target of a narcissist. So my ex-husband is a narcissist. And what I have learned now that I've gotten advanced certifications in relational trauma, I studied psychology in graduate school, with this deeper understanding of relational trauma, I've recognized that toxic personality types like narcissists will target people who are wounded in that way of trauma, or who are accustomed to that kind of being treated a certain way. So like if a parent is a narcissist, being raised in that environment, narcissists know those people, they know who to target. And additionally, even if you haven't experienced one of those forms of trauma, narcissists love to target people who have excellent relationship skills, who are giving and loyal and willing to just be persistent in the relationship and remain and patient in the relationship. And so this broader view of why I became a target, what happened to me, how I got out of it, is all critical pieces of my experience that now I can leverage, not to necessarily share with my clients, because typically in session, I don't do that. However, just being able to imagine from my own experience and relate it to my clients allows me to ask questions that other people might miss who didn't have the experience I have. So I think that's where it can really be helpful to guide others along their journey, is knowing what questions to ask at which stages in order to promote that growth and that transformation.
Very well said. Very well said. Yeah. Yeah. I liked what you said too, that narcissist, and I think perpetrators, predators, whatever, abusers, unhealthy, toxic people, they can smell vulnerability, you know? And when people are vulnerable, you know, it's because they're choosing a lot of times to put trust in people, despite the hurts that they've had, you know, and then what happens? It blows up in their face in the wrong hands.
Right.
So yeah, it's a imperfect setup for sure. A perfect setup if you're an abuser. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why it's so important to learn to trust yourself so that you know who to trust. Mm-hmm. I think that's an important component, that so many people are so willing to trust others, but they're not as willing to fully trust themselves and trust their own inclinations and the brain's prediction process, you know, because the brain and the body do work together. Psychologists have done research on the prediction process in the brain and the body's intuitive bias. And, you know, in one study in particular, they had volunteers choosing from two different card decks, and one was kind of more of a dangerous deck. It had high risk, high reward scenarios, and the other deck was very low risk, but low reward scenarios. And it took the volunteers 80 draws just to get to the point to realize with their conscious mind which deck was the dangerous deck, you know, the high risk, high reward. However, their bodies elicited a galvanic skin response, so they began increased sweating after only 10 draws. Because their body knew every time they went to draw from that high risk, high reward deck, their bodies knew that something was going to happen just with the limited amount of information, that intuitive bias. And so there is, you know, intuition isn't this magical mystery woo thing that so many people think.
Right,
yeah,
right.
It's not. It is something that is actually scientific. And, you know, it's not like it's portrayed in the movies and TV shows, as most things aren't in life. Mm-hmm. However, being able to leverage that, understand it, and be able to trust it, especially when you've experienced trauma, because when you've experienced trauma, you can tend to be hypervigilant to those signals. Your stress response goes off just a little bit faster than it does when you haven't experienced trauma. And so you do have to regulate that stress response in relation to the brain's prediction process. Because when you're in a state of stress, when you are fighting, fleeing, or freezing, your body isn't able to make those intuitive leaps because it's more concerned, that aspect of the network of your brain is shut down, right? Because the body's trying to say, let's get out of here, let's get safe. So it's a complex system. And it's one of the things that I love sharing with my clients is how to tap into that knowing and get into that place where you can really learn to trust yourself above all other people. And then from there, know who you can and can't trust.
Very well said again. Yeah. I feel like you've had these talks before.
Well, it is kind of what I do.
Yeah. It's so wonderful talking to people who get it, who get how. And that doesn't mean I think you have all the answers or I have all the answers. Like what's fascinating to me is like the more we learn about trauma, the more there is to learn.
Absolutely.
And especially when how it's experienced in the body and how our brains can work so hard to try to forget things or things are fragmented, but our body doesn't forget anything at all. It's our keepsake box. For better or for worse, and learning to trust our intuition, our inclinations is a word that you use. I think it's a beautiful word. Can give us some freedom, you know, just Absolutely. Learning to really trust ourselves.
Yeah,
you know,
there was actually a woman who, back in the day, they coined her as the first psychoneuroimmunologist. Her name was Dr. Candace Pert. And she obviously, before neuroscience was really a thing, she was studying neuroscience as well as psychology, as well as immunology. And she stated, the body is the subconscious mind. And when I read that a while ago, I was just like blown away. Not because I didn't know it, but that a scientist had recognized that, you know, and she talks about the molecules of emotion, how our bodies hold that emotion, and it actually latches on to our cells in our body. And neuroscientists believe that it also attaches along our neural pathways. So this is why when we get triggered, we experience such a strong emotional mm-hmm. response. We either get really angry or really frightened or really sad, whatever the emotion is, it's really big. It's because all these molecules of emotion are attached to that information that the brain has stored around a situation, a person, event that it wants to remember what to do. So this caused me pain mm-hmm. or this hurt. So I'm going to remember this for next time. And what I did this last time was I fought or I ran or whatever the response was, it gets encoded in those neural pathways. And then it gets linked up with that emotion. It's also why a lot of women in particular remember things based associated with memory. In fact, I think there was a study that said that we recall more things when it is attached to memory. So this is, you know, not to get off into the woo, but a lot of the law of attraction type people that support that work, what a lot of them are missing is that it's the aspect of attaching that emotion to it. Because the more things, it's like learning. If you can write and you can see and you can speak it, the more likely you're going to remember it. Same thing with these molecules of emotion. So you're absolutely correct that our body is, I loved how you said that, the keepsake box, or I forgot the exact term.
That's a new term for me. I don't know where that came from.
But it is, you know, everything is being held in our bodies. And this is why it's so important that when you go through some sort of, I consider it a rock bottom experience, whether it's betrayal, burnout, bereavement, et cetera, loss, is that you don't allow all of those emotions and all of that information to just get pushed down and repressed in your body. Because then that's what actually more and more studies are linking to chronic illness, you know, to heart disease, to inflammation, COPD, PTSD. I mean, so many connections. And, you know, so being able to deal with the emotion that you're dealing with when the event happens, and then the process of dealing with that emotion so that it can be properly, I almost think of it as properly filed, you know, so that you can access it when you need it. Mm-hmm. However, it's not just like building up a trash pile
on your shoulders
of stuff. Yeah. And on your shoulders or in your body anywhere. It's really about being efficient with that information.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm reading a grief guidebook right now, cause I have a few clients that have lost partners. I actually was a DOD therapist. I don't know if you knew that about me, but for 17 years. So I still work with a lot of veterans and a lot of combat trauma. And one of my clients has worked a lot with imaging. And so he worked with the ISIS videos, you know, which were horrifically traumatizing. And so he had a lot of grief. And so we're working through this grief book. And one of the techniques I thought was absolutely fabulous, and it's going with what you're saying about, you know, expressing that emotion and not just letting it get stuck or storing it, like doing something with it. And so I've always known that, of course, talking and writing makes sense. And then with people that had any kind of learning disabilities or younger children doing the artwork, but this book actually suggests with anytime you're trying to digest and work through strong emotions to use what's called a TWA, talk, write, and art. It's for everyone, you know? Yeah. So I was like, oh, wow, the three together, that could be really powerful. So, you know, whenever you feel intensely anger, intense anxiety, intense depression, if you talk it out, you write about it, and you do art, what would happen?
Yeah. You know? Well, there's five main ways of managing stress, and one of them is naming the emotion and being able to speak it. So instead of, you know, vomiting the emotion out on whoever is around you, whether you are physical or verbal or however you express your anger, being able just to speak it is not only empowering, however, it also offers people around you the opportunity for compassion. But, you know, that power in naming the emotion is so strong. And then the other thing is controlling your environment, you know, not controlling other people, but when you are experiencing that strong emotion, recognizing that you can change your environment. You can stand up. If you're sitting down, you can walk out of the room. You can walk outside, go for a walk. And then the other things is just, you know, focusing on that reframing. So I think, you know, with the talk, the write, and the art, it's all somatic, you know, it's all things that we're actually moving our body. And the more that we can move our body, like when we control our environment or even are examining different perspectives, when I'm working with clients, I'll have them actually physically move their bodies because there's something about that changing that environment that changes, it like breaks up the patterning or the neural pathways that are in our brain that are eliciting a certain response. So, you know, I know in psychology, a lot of the somatic psychology deals with allowing the emotions to be expressed in a safe way, but allowing allowing that movement, allowing that charge, allowing that energy to come up and then be released in a safe way is so vital to the healing process. And I can see, especially with art, being able to tap into your default mode network, being able to tap into that network in your brain that can access the subconscious so easily through creativity, through body wisdom, through all these different things, and then being able to, you know, have a an outlet through it for it through art just seems mm-hmm. like it would be so incredibly powerful.
Yeah, I love the idea of the movement too. It reminds me of perceptual shifts, which is, you know, our it's learning that our thoughts don't have to be all or nothing. It's learning to see things from different perspectives. And it's so much easier to see something from a different perspective if you're moving. It's like that car accident example. If one person's to the right of the car and one person's to the left, their experience is going to be different. And when they share it, it doesn't mean that their perception is wrong. It's just that there are other perceptions.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the, you know, a lot of people can get stuck in a very fixed-minded, you know, it has to be black or white, that really rigid mindset. And mm-hmm. in reality, the world is in shades of gray. You know, mm-hmm. there are so many different perspectives. There is a different perspective for every living being on this planet. You know, a dog has a different perspective than a human does. My husband has a different perspective as a white man in, you know, in the United States than I do as a white woman. You know, we have different perspectives on all different ways. Even as you say, you know, being able to, even if you witness the same event, having those different perspectives, because we bring our own bias to it. Not only is it our perspective by who we are, but also the information, the bias that we bring. And then the other thing is that when you allow yourself that flexibility to examine other people's perspectives, mm-hmm. once again, that's tapping into the default mode network in your brain, which allows you that space and the openness. And when you can practice that and then be able to take the information that you learn and put it into action using the task positive network, then you're able to get so much farther through whatever you're dealing with. You're able to process things. You're able to know what to do. You have that access to higher level functioning. And that all includes reducing the stress response and allowing your brain networks to actually do their jobs and not get in their way.
This is reminding me of post-traumatic growth. What do you know about that? And is that related to what we're talking about, do you think?
You know, I think that comes more from a psychology perspective. I think that thinking, you know, now that I've had the education and experience of both psychology as well as neuroscience, understanding, you know, I have such a greater understanding of how the brain and body work together. And, you know, there are certain limitations to psychology and there are certain mm-hmm. limitations to neuroscience. So being able to blend those two together and recognize, just like with the perspectives, you know, neuroscience might look at it from this way, psychology might look at it from this way. I can look at it from a third way, seeing both perspectives and joining it together. So I think that with, whenever there is trauma, there are so many different layers to the trauma, you know, depending on what happens. And, you know, I think even the links with like PTSD and the link of trauma to chronic illnesses, you know, there is a connection that way as well. So I think that the more that you can move through it, through any traumatic event, the more that you can recognize how it's impacting you, how it's impacting your brain, how it's impacting mm-hmm. the psychology of you, how it's impacting your health, being able to bring all that information together gives you the most options mm-hmm. to choose how you want to move forward. And in reality, isn't that what we all want? We want yeah. options. We want the freedom to choose what's right for us. And so having that knowledge of what's available to us really is what's empowering. And when you empower someone, especially someone that has experienced trauma, then they're able to heal more quickly because they start building confidence, they regain their self-esteem, and they learn to trust themselves, which, like I said, is, for me, I think the root of everything that we do as human beings.
Oh, great. Yeah. Yeah, I loved what you said about even the roles that you have as an adult professional. You forgot to mention survivor.
Yeah,
in that
survivor too.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Survivor, psychology, neuroscience. Yeah.
So many different layers. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I was thinking this spiritual injury that can happen from trauma to the moral injury. You can't go through trauma and not question morality a bit. Like, well, if I'm a good person, shouldn't good things be happening to me? Like, how messed up is this?
Yeah. 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 Dr. Lisa Miller is a psychologist, and I think she also works with neuroscience, but she and her team did a combination study between Columbia and Yale, and they examined what would happen or what's happening for people who suffer from mental challenges, you know, whether it's depression or alcoholism or, you know, anything that kind of falls into that psychological psychiatry type realm. And what they observed in the volunteers is that those people that had a spiritual connection to themselves, now this could be through religion or this could be through not having a religion, just, you know, believing in the power of the universe. If they believed in something that was outside of them, or they believed that they had a soul, you know, anything that really ties into that spiritual connection, they noticed that people had I want to make sure I get these stats right, a 72%, I believe it was 72% reduced risk of depression. If you had a strong connection to your spiritual self, if you were at high risk, so if you had parents that had mental challenges, there was a 90% reduction in the risk of depression if you were at high risk. And there's also a 62% reduced risk of suicide if you have a deep spiritual connection to yourself.
Yeah, I like
so
that.
Bringing that up, that spiritual connection is absolutely important because we're not just a mind. We're not just a body. We are mind, body, and soul. And being able to align those three aspects of ourselves is, and being able to work with professionals who can bring that perspective in. And if you can, you know, like me, I bring all of that in, but, you know, I don't know what your work is, but not too many people involve the mind, body, and soul. You know, generally we have focused on kind of like in the Western medical system,
like one,
you know,
thing
we prefer
or the
their
other.
Niche.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I'm just a neurologist or, you know, I'm just a back specialist, and yet the back and the brain and, or you know, the head work together. So shouldn't we have something that works together that's more holistic minded? But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely a holistic practitioner. Strong training in mental health. So of course, a lot of what I did in my early career was solely mental health, but the more training and books reading and studying I've done, I'm very convinced on the intricate system of the three being very powerful to work together.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I knew from early on in my career, I read something, I don't think it was Dr. Lisa Miller, and it wasn't those stats that you mentioned, but I read that statistically people who had faith in something, higher power, they did much better in recovery from mental health or physical health issues. So it's like, oh, I definitely want to feed that part of myself and often encourage my clients, you know, it's like, you know, I don't care if you're Baptist or Catholic or Buddhist or Muslim or none of those, if your spirituality is gardening and being more in tune with the earth, you know, just think about exploring your spirituality more because of the benefits of it.
Yes, of absolutely.
How beautiful it can make your life. It helps you see life more in color, I think, as well.
Yeah. And just the broadening perspectives. I mean, it's, once again, I think a lot of people can also get trapped in that fixed-minded perspective, even with spirituality. You know, it has to be this way. The Bible says right here. And it's kind of like, okay, we need to allow that space for metacognition, to step away and say, Okay, is it really that it says it right there, or is that Bible translated from several different languages? Chances are by monks who had very poor, you know, low light as they were copying. Do you think they could have gotten any of these words wrong? Do you think that any of these words could have been translated not in their totality of the meaning? So, you know, it's once again taking that metacognition perspective, that neutral observer perspective, and recognizing, are there other possibilities? You know,
critical thinking.
Yes, it's critical thinking. Thank you. And I think that a lot of people struggle with critical thinking. And unfortunately, a lot of it is because of the educational system in the United States. You know, we really, that's another topic, but just being able to give everyone the opportunity to learn these skills so that everyone can contribute to the whole and make the world a better place. And I know that's kind of simplistic, but in generality, that's what we want to do, right?
Teresa for president.
I'll embrace both logic and insight. The integrated president.
That's awesome. We need a neuroscientist to be president. Okay, so I think you have a lot of wisdom. And what are your favorite books that are about the connection between neuroscience and trauma? Like, do you have any other book recommendations other than your own book, which I'll have?
Absolutely. In fact, so highly recommend Molecules of Emotion by Dr. Candace Pert. Lisa Feldman Barrett wrote How Emotions Are Made. I'm sorry, I'm looking up at my bookshelf as I'm naming off these books. What's another one? Brainstorm is good for, it's by Dr. Daniel Segal. He is the UCLA School of, he's a clinical psychologist in the UCLA School of Medicine and the executive director of the MindSight Institute.
And he's a psychiatrist too and a neurologist.
A neuroscientist and a psychiatrist. Yes. So what he does is he really, his big takeaway that I learned from him is that integration is the linkage of differentiated parts in our brain. So there's this common myth that continues to be perpetuated in different circles, even in, neuroscience workshops, definitely in the realms of leadership development, leadership workshops, or even emotional intelligence workshops. Some of the big kind of guru coaches like, I can picture him. He's the really big guy, well-known coach.
Tony Robbins.
God. Tony Robbins. Thank you. Don't know why it was blanking on me for some. I could see his face and his chiseled jaw. In any case, coaches like him like to perpetuate the myth that our lower brains need to be controlled. You know, they almost have this perception of our brains being layered like a three-layer cake, right? You've got your reptilian brain and your different three different brain levels. And what Dr. Dan Segal says that, was my big takeaway is the brain isn't really like a three-layer cake. It's really like an orchestra. It's about utilizing all the different aspects of our brain that comes together and creates that beautiful symphony. So it's the woods and the brass and the winds and the percussion. All those different aspects of our brain works together rather than being layered and we need to get our reptilian brains under control. So love what his work is. And I actually have the book on my bedside right now that I think is really, really amazing. And it is when the body says no, or something. I'll have to get back to you with the title, but it's about stress in the body and how the body indicates to you when you're experiencing stress. And it's almost like that intuitive leap where your body is signaling to you what is going on. And so when the body says no, you want to pay attention to it. So I'll get you that title so that you can put it in the show notes.
Oh, that would be amazing. I wanted to share that Dan Segal's book, Parenting from the Inside Out, was life-changing for me. One of my first therapy experiences going myself, she had me work through that and I did all the journaling questions. And it was my first time reading a book about, trauma and the impact on the brain. Was through him. And so it was a little bit difficult, the the brain pieces were difficult for me at the time. Now it's much, much easier after lots of literature. but it was just so helpful and therapeutic to just work through the questions.
Really insightful guy.
Yeah. He is a good guy. Yeah. Oh, we could probably talk for, you know, a week straight, not run out of content or ideas.
There's so many aspects, yes.
So for the people who are tuned in today that, you know, they're in the struggle, what's something hopeful or inspiring that you could leave them with today?
Yeah. I think the biggest takeaway, and I know I've mentioned this several times, is focus on learning to trust yourself. That really is the root that will guide you. It will be your internal spotlight that will always, always, always tell you what the next right step is. I think for people that have experienced trauma, whether it's relational trauma or physical trauma or any type of trauma, a lot of times, because of the stress response, because of that, the brain's desire to stay safe, you know, we build up anxiety, you know, over the what ifs. What if I go outside and what if it happens again? What if I get a phone call that, you know, someone's died again? What if, what if, what if? And I think the really powerful thing is being able to come back to that present moment. And instead of trying to think, you know, 10 steps out in the future with all these what ifs, just focusing on what's my next right step. And tuning into the body and allowing your brain and your body to work together to give you that next right step. And actually, when you think about it, I was in relationships with a couple different contractors, and the women in my family have always been extremely handy. So, you know, I've laid tile, I've reframed homes, I've done all sorts of things. And one of the things that my aunt, I can always remember her saying, is measure twice, cut once. And I think that can be applied to dealing with trauma. Instead of being really quick and just responding, you know, cutting before you measure twice, you want to allow time and space for that rest, for that presence, so that you can calculate, okay, what would it be like if I took one step? Okay, from that one step, now what are my choices? Okay, let me take one more step. So it's kind of that similar idea, measure twice, cut once, because that allows you a little bit more space to experience a new perspective, experience a new environment, and then be able to make the next right choice from there. And understand too that sometimes it might be a step back. Maybe you take that step forward and you realize, yeah, you know what, this isn't going in the direction I want to go. Let me take a step back and reevaluate again.
I love that. Measure twice, cut once. Who knew that kind of advice would help you in this realm, right? Did you know if you measure twice and cut once, that will really help you with your trauma?
It will reduce the mistakes. Yep.
your response, because we know that the triggers can be pretty quick and easy, and we can't control the situations that trigger us, like the people involved, but we can only control our response.
And so instead of just reacting, taking that moment and just going, okay, what would be my next right step? Instead of, you know, 100 miles an hour.
I know no one that would act up that way.
I've personally never done it in my life.
Yeah, so that was really great.
100 times.
right. Yeah, so I think people listening, that's a huge takeaway, you know, just to sit with something for a minute before reacting. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And pay attention to what's going on in your body as you're sitting. Because our body gives us lots of messages. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And just remember that, you know, I used to do dating and relationship coaching early on, and you know, when women were debating, you know, they'd get triggered by something that this guy they're dating was doing. And, you know, because they had experienced trauma, once again, it was kind of like blown out of proportion. So they were constantly needing that kind of guidance of, okay, is this like a reality check, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I would remind the women that were working through things and were learning to trust themselves through this process, you know, learning to trust the guy they're with and learning to trust themselves, that their bodies would let them know if something really was bad happening. Your body will let you know. So being able to trust that. I remember telling so many of my clients, you can always break up with them. You can always break up with them. But once you've broken up with them, it's going to be a lot harder to get back together. So in each choice you make, make sure, are you doing this because you really know in your body that this is the wrong guy for you, or this is the wrong, you know, the wrong situation or what have you? Because you can always break up, but just give it maybe another month and see how you feel. Give it maybe another 3 months. If it's still going on, then you can make the decision then. But so I think that kind of reinforces once again the work that I do with clients in relational trauma is allowing them that space. Because in that space, you can not only rest, which helps reset your stress response and bring you back to that just right balance in your brain state, but it also allows you to, like you said, tap into your body and really hear what your body's saying when it's at its wakeful rest state, because that's when you're able to tap into your intuition. That's when your brain and your body are working together for that higher level functioning that allows you to make really superb choices in life so that you get better results with less effort and so much more stress, or so much less stress rather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you so much. For people who would like to know more about you, get to know you, check out your work, where would you like them to go to?
Yeah, the best place is my website, www.teresaladotto.com. And I'm also an expert on the OWL app. So you can find a link on that on my website. But it's someplace where when I'm online, and you can actually now request, if I'm offline, you can request that I come online to take a phone call from you. And I do phone calls in 10 and 20 minute segments so that you can, you know, if you just need a quick question answered, you can ask me that question. Or if you just need a few minutes of coaching and just kind of a perspective check, you know, it's a great way to kind of get to know me and need to get to know you and to help you out when you need just that really quick, gosh, I don't know what to do in this situation. Let me hop on the OWL app and see if Teresa's available.
That's so awesome. Thank you so much, Teresa, for being with us today.
You are so welcome, Karen. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening in today. Please join us next week, same day and time. Also, I would love for you to check out my website, healthrivedream.com.